Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Sam Barker.
Hello.
Well, listeners, we are going to be talking in this podcast about the Harvey Weinstein case and his recent, very recent conviction on two counts in the criminal proceedings that have captured the world's attention.
Having said that, though, I did try to find footage online of the trial, i.e. the evidence or any of the cross-examination or submissions by any of the advocates. And unlike the O.J. Simpson case, it didn't seem to be broadcast. And that would be obviously because it's a sex abuse case.
Yes, and that's a good point, isn't it?
Not as much for media circus as back in the O.J. case.
You're very dependent on reporters providing the accounts and the follow-ups and so on.
Before we get down into the details of it all, did you see the footage of the victim's advocate? I can't remember her name. She's the solicitor.
Oh, yeah.
And Harvey Weinstein's solicitors. And they came out, or attorneys as they're called in the United States, and they came out and they were fighting over the microphone in front of the press.
Well, it's a different world over there compared to London, where things are a little bit different in so many ways.
Indeed. But anyway, I interrupted you there. You go ahead.
Anyway, so we thought we'd talk about the case because it is highly significant for many reasons. We're all familiar with the Me Too movement and what that was all about and is still all about. And the fact that powerful men, put powerful men in quotes, are able to abuse their power in order to get what they want. Mm. And the unpalatable aspect of all of that is that it's often an abuse of power and people get hurt and hurt in the worst possible way.
And there's a lot of scope to cover that. Well, not necessarily cover it up, but come to binding confidentiality agreements or gag clauses, which has happened in a lot of these cases, particularly even cases involving Harvey Weinstein.
Yes, and you get subtle forms of blackmail, indeed in many cases not so subtle. You know, it's if you speak out, I'm going to ruin your career. If you speak out, you will not be able to stay in this job. You won't be able to stay working in this company. I'm going to ruin you. You know, it's all pretty crude, unpleasant, nasty.
It is, and what this case has shown, I think, is something very different in the trend or how sex abuse cases are prosecuted. In that, in this case, I think I'm correct in what I was reading yesterday. My recollection of it was that at least two of the complainants said that there was the initial incident was a sexual assault and non-consensual, and then there was consensual sexual behaviour later on. And it, you know, people would think a lot of the time that that would be fatal to a sex abuse case, you know, that there was consensual sexual activity later on. And in this case, the kind of surrounding circumstances, the abuse of power, the kind of threats to career, etc., made it so that this trial was able to go ahead and indeed convictions were secured.
Yeah, interesting point.
How these kind of cases usually run.
Yeah, indeed. It's reminded me that in recent podcasts we've spoken about consent.
Yeah.
And how society is having to really very quickly catch up on what consent is all about, because there is some pretty fundamental and disturbing misunderstandings as to what consent is all about and what is acceptable behaviour and so on.
Well, it's kind of a misunderstanding of it. Generally, if you take that this is an unusual trial because there was an initial consensual act followed by allegedly, well, now proven to be non-consensual acts, that should actually be the usual way to look at it, that, you know, you assess each incident individually, whereas, you know, we would have been saying last year that if people were thinking about this in terms of consent, the fact that the first incident or the first encounter was consensual, it'd be very difficult to prove that the later ones were non-consensual.
Indeed. You know, it's, I think everyone is on a very sharp learning curve and is actually having to pause and actually think about their attitudes and the approach that, you know, we all have to take individually, whether it's your private sphere of your life or your professional sphere. And of course, it influences how cases are prosecuted.
Yeah.
So, yes, we were talking in a recent podcast about sometimes there's a certain acceptance of violence in relationships.
Is that Michael Salter's findings?
Yeah. So yeah. When we were speaking to Professor Salter, he was explaining to us how there seems to be a certain tolerance of violence in relationships, or as I would say, so-called relationships, if there's violence. And, you know, which brings us back to this, you know, the abuse of power, one individual exercising power over another to get their way or to have their sexual needs satisfied.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to appreciate that sometimes aggressors, men, behaves aggressive sexually simply because they like to dominate, and it's just another manifestation of dominating somebody and exercising power over somebody, you know, this, which brings us back to the convicted Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, and this movement, this Me Too movement as well, which is all about exposing that kind of corrupt behaviour, really,
yeah,
particularly within a workplace setting.
So he's been sent to prison, having been convicted, although he hasn't been sentenced yet. It's understood that he's going to try an appeal,
yep,
which is interesting. I have no idea what his chances are. One would assume that they're pretty poor. But, you know, given that there was a jury trial, we're not American lawyers.
No, it's very difficult thinking about it in the American context because so many things over there happen that you just never expect, really, would you?
So it certainly wouldn't happen here.
No.
So one of the interesting aspects is the fact that evidence was given essentially to provide evidence as to his bad character. I think that's the way of putting it. So this was evidence from people who had complaints about him, but those complaints, as I understand, had never been subjected to criminal proceedings or civil findings.
Yeah.
And I think it was basically to show that he had a propensity or a tendency to behave.
To commit this kind of behaviour. Yeah.
Yes.
And in this country, in the UK, that's a very difficult test to get over, isn't it? Well, the standard's quite high to be able to introduce bad character evidence.
You need
a conviction.
You need convictions. You know, you can't, you know, to put it in simple terms, produce somebody who says, oh, yeah, I didn't like him, he was horrible, and he behaved like that to me, and use that as a springboard to try and secure a conviction in respect of some other complaint made by some other person.
Yeah.
I think the courts would say, well, that's, you know, so prejudicial.
Exactly,
And so unsafe because it's never been properly tested, so to speak, in a court. It just wouldn't be allowed.
Well, thinking out loud here, surely in the United States they would have the threshold being prejudice, right, as well, you would think. And it might be the case that that's not the case. I don't know.
Well, this evidence was allowed.
It was allowed and it seems prejudicial.
It appears, even by their standards, to be, which I'm not saying are better or worse than British standards, seems to be controversial.
Yeah.
So that
would be the basis of the appeal.
Maybe the way that an attempted appeal will go. But of course, we need to make the point that he says that he's innocent and that he's been wrongfully convicted, presumably. And, you know, as is evidenced by this, you know, news that he's going to appeal. And of course, there's other allegations that have yet to be tested in the courts. So this is a story that's far from over. But I think for our purposes, it's useful in our podcast to highlight some of the background and some of the issues, particularly as regards, I think, this issue of consent.
Yeah, absolutely. And also it's not over because there are still charges that he's facing in Los Angeles.
That's right. Yeah, you know, there's other cases yet to come. So this is a story that will continue to run and run.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Sam. And podcast listeners, if you're interested in the issue of consent, which is a big legal topic as well as a moral one, please tune in to some of our previous podcasts.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hj.com. talks.co.uk.